Welcome to Fat Chicks on Top. This podcast contains frank discussions about the body, sexuality, and occasionally uses swear words, which may not be appropriate for people under the age of 18. This podcast also uses facts, statistics, and mathematics, which may not be appropriate for liberal arts majors. And this podcast relies on science and reality, which may not be appropriate for evangelicals. Welcome to Fat Chicks on Top. You are here with your host, Auntie Vice, and it's good to be here. I am so excited today. I have Luna KM from Submissive Guide. For those of you who have ever taken a class from me or gone on my website, you know submissiveguide.com is a top recommendation. I love Luna's writing and their work and their approach to BDSM and DS. So I finally got her on the show. Welcome to Fat Chicks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for inviting me.
It's fantastic to have you here. You are a wealth of knowledge. Oh, my gosh. Across so many platforms and doing so many things. So let's start with the how did you make this a career?
By accident. way back in my early history, I explored the internet for information. When it was still a bunch of home pages and GeoCity pages. And I could not find anything that connected with what I thought would be real BDSM. It was very fantasy, very gore. And I know there are people who do real gore, and that's fine for them, but it just didn't connect. And I'm like, that doesn't seem like something you would do with your spouse or with your boyfriend. It just felt no. And so I started blogging about what I was learning about submission and how it was working for me. And people started following me. And they're like, you should really make a website for this stuff. And I went, maybe I'll try that someday. And my partner purchased a domain for me for like a birthday present and said, here you go, have fun. And that's really how Submissive Guide started. I didn't make money from it for a long time, but, you know, it starts out as passion project and then you hope to make money from your passion projects, right? So that's where that started.
You do. So you talk, and you came in probably about the same time I came in on the internet, where it was like, I had a Pine and Eudora account. Like I've been with the internet since before we had search engines. So when you're coming in and you're seeing this gore, and that's not G-O-R-E, like, you know, splatter. For those of you who listen to, like, my interviews with Gretchen Felker-Martin, different kind of gore here, folks. Let's talk about gore for a minute, because I can't wrap my head around it, but a lot of people do.
A lot of people do. I think what people like about it is that there's a suspension of reality within it. And the roles that people can adopt in a Gorean lifestyle with a home stone and with the all-powerful male dom and the submissive naked and kneeling all of the time, that gets people's motor running. And so that is what really attracts a lot of people to that.
What felt more right to you in your early part of the journey, since you're not going to be on all fours in positions naked all of the time?
What felt right to me was actually the first book I read, which was probably one of the very first actual resources out there, Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns, by Molly Devon and, oh boy, Peter something? Crud. Anyways, I'm sure you can find it. It's still out there. The information is antiquated, so obviously you have to come in with that in mind. It is a very old book. But it helped me realize that real people were doing this and not just people playing on the internet. So that is really what opened up the world of real stuff was to me. And then after I read that, I went into this really lovely place called Yahoo Messenger and started messaging people because their profiles, they used to have lots of online profiles. And I found one that said they identified as a dominant. And I went, can I ask you lots of questions? And he was a very friendly person. And I asked him all sorts of questions, like, how do you really do this in real life? And that was what opened up the world to me, was online.
So how a lot of us come to it, and anymore, that's the primary way folks are coming to it. When did you start to meet, like, actual other kinky people in real life?
I think I took about a year of online exploration. During that time, I was married to somebody who I tried to get interested in kink, and he said no. And so it was ultimately, do I stay this way or do I explore what I'm really interested in? And during that separation, I looked up the word munch and my local town and found that there was one. And I went, I get to meet actual people. Am I going to be comfortable with this? It was at a Happy Chef, which I don't even know if those exist anymore. They don't here anymore. 24-hour diner, essentially. And I went all on my own, showed up, and five other people were there. apparently, that was a lot of people for our area because I had messaged them and said, hey, I'm new and I'd like to meet you. And all these people are like, ooh, new people, let's meet you. And so people came just to meet me. And I'm like, this is odd. But we had some wonderful conversations and we got into talking about some really odd things like mashed potato wrestling. And that was it. I attended every single month afterward.
That's amazing. And mashed potato wrestling is new. I have actually not come across that kink. So bravo on bringing up something that has not come across my world yet. I may now have to go down a rabbit hole on the web.
It may just be me. It may just be me standing in a kiddie pool. Who knows?
I'm kind of fascinated with it because I grew up in Idaho on a potato farm. Like that, you just really piqued my interest as this like old potato farm kid. So you start meeting people and stuff. But you talk about going, separating in your marriage, because this was something that you want to pursue. And this is something that people bring up to me, like when I teach and stuff, is when you are in a mixed marriage where one of you is really into it and one of you's not. And it's hard, especially for women, to say, hey, I'm going to prioritize my desire and pleasure. Where did that ability come from? Because that's not something we're trained to do.
For me, it came out of desperation. I was miserable and I, for the longest time, couldn't figure out why I was so unhappy. I'm like, isn't marriage supposed to be a happy thing? Am I not supposed to be enjoying myself? And it took a long time for me to realize that I was settling for something that I thought was the ideal and I knew that I could have better if I just took out a sheet of paper and wrote down, what are my priorities? What are the things I need? And where is it lacking in this relationship? And when those things that were lacking couldn't be fixed, I went, okay, then. And we split up on amicable terms. He's just like, you're okay. If that's what you need, fine. Okay. And yeah, that was a difficult decision, but I don't regret it.
Well, and let's hear it for amicable divorce. I had one with my ex-wife, but God, it makes a difference long term.
It does. In fact, we still stay in contact on Facebook and we have this pact that, like, if something happens to you, please have your current spouse let me know. You know, it's just like, we still have that level of care. We don't like talk every day. It's like once a year, we're like, hey, how are you? Great. And move on. So
you start to explore this. What was it about submission that resonated so deeply with you?
Submission for me was about making another person happy. Doing things for someone else felt so good. And it wasn't just customer service, which I worked in for years. It was this person that I love and care about. I'm going to make sure that I prepare their coffee exactly the way they want, every time they want it, so that they never have to think about it again. And to me, that was so magical. And to be able to do that on many different levels in a relationship, that just, it feels good. And I wanted to feel good all the time. So that's really where submission is for me.
And that service to somebody that you are devoted to is something that I, you know, people will talk about, but I know that there are a lot of submissives out there that struggle with that type of service because there's lots of different ways to be a submissive. Did you have inklings in early parts of your life where like that service was clearly an important aspect of your identity?
Not one single bit. I am a first child, oldest child, and so I have all of the I'm in charge sort of things that come from that. And I did not think in the slightest that I was going to love being in service to somebody else and sometimes not being able to make my own decisions. Or the thing that this is something that comes up all the time. One little nitpicky thing that I have is that milk does not have to expire on the date stamped on the carton. For me, I'm fine. It doesn't all of a sudden, the milk doesn't know it is April 18th. but for Nightmare, it does. And to this day, years later, I'm still like, what do I do with all this leftover milk? I don't drink this much milk. I need to buy smaller milk, but then we run out, so we buy more milk. So we still have leftover milk. Yeah. So the little nuances of service sometimes are just really niggling at that eldest child brain. So.
Well, an eldest child is a thing. I am an eldest child too. And on top of it, I'm a double Aries. I'm an Aries rising and an Aries moon sign. So like that control thing is very strong in a lot of part of my life. But there is something really special about serving a dominant. I want to talk a little bit about some of the stereotypes around that, because a lot of people think submissives are weak or indecisive, or you live in this world where you write about submission all the time and you talk to thousands of people who do this. Mm-hmm. What has been your experience with most submissives? Like, what are personality traits that run strong?
They're very intelligent. Most of them are go-getters and love to research things. I have yet to find a submissive that's not like, I don't know how to do that. Oh, well, they're like, I don't know how to do that. Let's find out. Submissives that I've talked to love to talk about what they're learning, where they are in their journey. They're not afraid to say, I've only been at this for 3 months and I don't know what I'm doing. They are definitely not weak people. You actually have to be very strong to surrender. You have to be very strong to surrender. And yes, the personalities that I encounter are very strong. So that weak, I don't know where the weakness comes from, if it's like a stereotype more for male submissive gender stereotypes. And unfortunately, they do get a lot of they're weak, and that gets amplified in their relationship search. But no, the people who are submissive have to be strong.
I love you bring up the research, because the nerd runs strong in our community.
When I first started, I had 3 ring binders that I would find stuff online and I would print it off, and then I would add the little tag on the side, tag what it was from, and it would get sorted by category. And I did. And then, of course, you know, browsers these days, you can bookmark digitally. So you don't have to print stuff off. But yep, 3 ring binders.
Well, and it's true. Submissives love to figure out more about submission. So you've been at this for quite some time. What are a few of the things that really have stood out to you in learning about submission, and both in your own journey and in reading and talking to other people?
The big things that touch me, that keep coming up for me, even I've been doing this for 20-ish years with the same dominant. So there's that. You will make mistakes. You will beat yourself up for those mistakes, but you have to come out the other side or you'll never learn anything. A lot of what we learn as submissives is to try and be perfect, try to be better than the other. I don't know how many people have potentially read Submissive Guide and went, I want to be exactly like Luna. And I'm like, please don't. Please be you. You don't need to be me. So yeah, making mistakes, learning from those mistakes. And sometimes mistakes you repeat, unfortunately, but you have to keep learning to improve. That one has been big for me. Another one that is actually hopefully resolved is that you can't change the way your partner dominates you. I don't know if it's that eldest child energy, but you can't control the relationship. You can't say, I only want you to dominate me this way or say these things. It's all a negotiation. You all have to say, this is who I am as a dominant. This is who I am as a submissive. Do we mesh? And if not, do we compromise or do we not do this? And very early on, Nightmare made it very clear that it doesn't matter that he's only 20 years old. He's going to dom my ass like no tomorrow. And I was not going to have a say in so many different things. And at first I pushed against it and then realized this was not making me happy. And my goal was to be happy. So yeah, you throw the milk away on the 18th. That's what you do.
Mine is how you load a dishwasher.
Is it?
That's my sticking point. Like that and food safety. Like, you put the meat on the bottom shelf of the fridge on a plate so the meat juices don't drip. Like, I have rules for reason. Like, we all have those sticking points, though.
We do, and they can either control us or we can submit to them.
So, you get out of your first marriage. How did you go about finding, meeting, and falling in love with a dominant? Because when you're a new submissive on it, like, I don't know if you've seen the video of the iguana running across the sand and all the snakes come after them, right? And then it has to, like, run. That's what I feel like when you're a new submissive in the community, everybody's, woo, now we're into you. Like, but you got to sort it out and find the right one. So for you, what was that like?
Well, I didn't have a traditional dating story for you here. Okay. I met both of my partners, my ex-husband and my current spouse, online. And I imported both of them. So my first husband was French and Nightmare is English. And my dad was very adamant for a time that I must not like American men. And I'm like, I haven't been approached by one. So here we are. I met both of them through chat rooms. I met Nightmare when I was just exploring IRC, Internet Relay Chat. And Bondage.com used to have Internet Relay Chat servers, and I would frequent them. And we met in a chat room called Anal Sluts and Whores. And we were just friends at first because I was still married at the time. And then things just slowly developed and I split up and we just kept going. And we dated for a little over a year and a half before we made the decision that he was going to come over. And he came over on a plane in the middle of the night and never has gone home. So I must be a good thing.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, and that's got to be intimidating in and of itself, because you've had this long distance relationship and things don't always pan out face to face. So did you have trepidations with him coming over initially?
I was terrified. I was afraid that he wouldn't be attracted to me. I'm a big lady and he is not. But I was like, I hope you're going to like me because you're living with me for the month that your ticket says you're here for. So we're going to have to make it work. But yes, I was very nervous, very scared, but I had poured my heart out in emails and chat conversations to be like, I need you to be 100% on board with this because you're making this big change for me. And I totally didn't think I was worth it at the time. So yeah, it's very scary, but I am very glad it worked out.
You bring up a couple of things I want to touch on. First, you said you had this feeling that you weren't worth it for this big change. That's another really common theme I hear when people talk is self-worth. And one of the questions that come up are, do you get into submission because you don't feel you're worth more in a relationship?
Unfortunately, yes. There are a lot of submissives that feel that they need to enter DS relationship to feel more valuable to someone. The idea of being owned by somebody makes you feel elevated. And I get a lot of submissives who have zero self-worth, zero self-esteem, are absolutely horrible with the negative self-talk about themselves. And they think that having a dominant will fix all of that. And unfortunately, it does not. It's not a good idea to enter a relationship where you think that being in the relationship alone will fix it. So you got to have some love for yourself before you can love someone else.
So on that, you have this feeling of unworthiness. And I want to point out to listeners that it's not just submissives that have this. I mean, God knows how many women get married because they think all that ring is going to make them somehow more worthy or better or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go about growing that feeling of self-worth while you're in this DS relationship?
Oh, that it took a long time because I really did feel like I wasn't special enough, that he wasn't going to stick around after the 30 days. I was just a fun little fling and he was going to go home. It took him telling me that I need to see how beautiful I am in order for me to start seeing how beautiful I am. And for some people, that is required. Some people need someone else to say, listen, you need to see how magical you are as a person because I'm seeing it. You're reflecting it to me. Put a mirror on yourself. And I am not perfect. I still have many times of I'm useless. I am self-deprecating. I have negative self-talk a lot. And it just requires me to remind myself, there's a reason I'm here. The goal is always happiness. And so I need to find what makes me happy. And being miserable about yourself, whether that be your physical appearance, whether that be the fact that you made a mistake when you served them coffee, whether that was sex didn't work out the way you wanted it to, anything, you have to be able to let go of that and give yourself grace and love yourself anyway, because those things are just life's experiences.
How did you find the capacity to give yourself that grace?
Lots of therapy. I love my therapist. I recommend everyone have a therapist, just like you have a primary care doctor. Everyone should have somebody they can talk to that is a third party that is not involved in your life other than to hear all of the crap you have going on in your head. It took a lot of that, a lot of them pointing me in directions that said, look at all of the goodness you have around you. And see how you're affecting people. for me to realize that I am worth sitting here in this chair and having this conversation or being in that relationship or, you know, going to that doctor's appointment. There's a reason I'm here doing these things. And I do a lot of journaling. It's something that I preach on Submissive Guide, that all new submissives should have a journal. All new submissives should write about what they're thinking, write about what they're learning, write about what they're talking to others about, because so much of what we learn is internal. So much we teach ourselves so much just by word vomit on a page. So I highly recommend everyone should journal. And that's how Submissive Guide really started. It was just me word vomiting on a page.
I think that's key to so many of us. Like, I learn through everything I write, right? And this is, and it's not just about, for me, just about kink. It's been literally everything I've done in my life. I got to get it on the page. There's something really powerful about that. And just a plug, you offer regular journal prompts to folks. I want to get a plug in for a few of your things right now, because they really are super helpful. So talk a little bit about the journaling things you offer for submissives.
I have a couple options for journal prompts. I have a website for my book, 365 Days of Submission, which is, as the title says, 365 journal prompts broken up into different categories to help you learn and explore yourself. That website also has an email that you can sign up and get a journal prompt sent to you daily. So you can do them on your blog or on paper if you choose to. And I also share those journal prompts on Instagram and Twitter and FetLife. And journaling is an important part. And sometimes you just need someone to help you with the questions. And so I have that. I also have several 30 days of journal prompt type series on Submissive Guide that if you want to group things together, you can do series of journal prompts as well. So yeah, that's one of the big things for me.
We'll have those links up, but I do want to send people that way because it is a tremendous amount of content creation to do that. I send out 5 prompts a month in my newsletter, and that's about the bandwidth I have. So to produce that many, and that's 365 a year, every year. Like, that is a tremendous amount of work and a tremendous amount of resource for folks.
I have enough for 2 more books if I wanted to right now. So
that's amazing. The other thing you brought up when you're talking about your you know, relationship with your dominant is the feeling that, like, you're in a bigger body and they may not like a bigger body. So kink world, especially 25 years ago, 20 years ago, had a different relationship to body types. So when you're coming into the community, how were you received? Because this is Fat Chicks on Top. There's a lot of fat chicks who listen to this.
I live in Iowa, where there's a lot of fat people. So it kind of depends on your geographic location for starters. Because if you're in an area that the body type is a lot smaller, you could be treated a little differently. But my first semi-local munch, not the one that I did the mashed potato wrestling story, but another one that had play parties. That very first munch I went to, they invited me to the play party. And I went going, I'm just going to watch. And there were 20-ish people there. And I would have to say 3/4 of them were large people, which made me feel wonderful. And then they started taking their clothes off. And I went, oh God, I hope I don't have to do that. It was just like, oh, that's what you look like. You know, it was very jarring because you don't see that in porn. Even the big people look smooth and perfect and don't have all the jiggles. I don't know how they do that. I felt more accepted in my local area. This is not to say further out, I didn't have issues. When I started sharing pictures of me online, I had a lot of people saying that I shouldn't be a submissive because I was overweight, that I couldn't control my impulses, that I couldn't, that I must be overeating and not exercising, and that's not healthy. And you can't be a submissive if you're not a healthy weight. I got that a lot. I still get that a lot. That's garbage. Everyone is different sizes, different shapes, different colors, and none of that is going to change how you submit to somebody. And you have to learn when someone is throwing you garbage, then, you know, and having that self-worth is going to help with that as well. But yeah, I think I was lucky. I was lucky to be in a group of people that were getting naked, that were big, that made me feel, I think I can do this. And I actually got brave enough. I took my top off and I played with somebody. I played with a woman and I don't identify as anything other than heterosexual. And I'm like, am I going to be okay with this? And I'm like, hey, I got my kink on. Who cares? And that is really how I embrace that. And I still to this day, I'm like, gender, who cares?
So how did submitting change your relationship with your own body?
Well, it made me become more rigid in goal setting and focus. I was very laissez-faire about my body. It was whatever it is. And even like with what I wear or what I do with my hair or any makeup, any of that was very whatever. No one's looking at me anyway. Who cares? And when I became embracing the submissive me, I went, there's a part of this that tells me I should care more about my body and about what I look like and how I'm caring for myself. Because how I care for myself I want to emulate that to others, saying, I care about myself. I care about you. This is going to be equal. Because I had this feeling that if I didn't care about myself, I was going to be lazier with my job. I was going to be lazier with my submission, that I was going to just not take it seriously. So for me, feeling good about myself, dressing appropriately, helped me to be take it more seriously, to be better at myself.
Did you ever get to a point where you were comfortable being naked in a play space?
Yes, very quickly. Very quickly, I found that I was quite the exhibitionist and still to this day tend to only wear clothing for like the first 10 minutes after they review the dungeon rules. My clothing just comes off and I'm just like, who's around? Let's go. Let's play. Anyone available? Let's go. I'm that sort. Yeah. I should just wear a sign saying available, spank me. And
did doing that and being an exhibitionist, especially where other people are looking at you and looking at you in a sexualized space, did that make you feel more comfortable in your own skin outside of the dungeon?
I think so, especially when I would receive appreciative looks. When I had my first few pickup play sessions with some strange guy I had just met there, and he's like, I'll play with you. And I'm like, this is hot. That gave me a lot of boost because I'm like, my mind was like, he won't play with me if he's not interested in what he sees. So he must be interested in what he sees. Let's do this. And it did. It did for a long time. That was my high for weeks afterward. I'm like, somebody liked me for weeks.
Well, you get good feedback, right? And when you're bigger bodied, that's not feedback we get often. You get the shit you were saying about what you got on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, the internet can be a dumpster fire of humanity if you're not careful.
It's because they're all anonymous. They think they can get away with everything because no one knows who you are behind the keyboard.
You're right. So you bring up people saying, well, because you're bigger body, you can't be a submissive. And I hear people go, well, because you're a man, you can't be submissive, or because you're black, you all of these stereotypes. So at the core, what is submission?
Submission is obediently following another person with love and care and devotion. And it doesn't have to have kink or BDSM in it. I know a lot. I know at least four vanilla couples that they're totally obedient. They're totally dominant and submissive. They just have different words for it. They function a different way, but they still love, honor, and care for each other. And one is the leader and one is the follower. And if it works, it works.
Yeah. Well, and I think you bring up that there are people who don't even realize they're doing it. My paternal grandparents, my grandmother always referred to my grandfather as daddy, and I never thought that was weird or anything else until I discovered the kink community. I'm like, but very devoted, very, like, I remember her giving my sister and I the marriage talk, and that before your husband comes home, you need to basically wash your pits and tits and put a bow in your hair and listen to him and have a drink ready. And I'm going, I don't know if this was conscious or not in their dynamic, but oh my God, this is so classically submissive.
Yes, very much so. That was a very 1950s thing, though. They emulated the male power and the female submissive. So
yeah. So you are in a heterosexual relationship, and there's so much discussion now around gender and roles, and, you know, we both came up during the second wave of feminism and all of that. Do you ever have yourself give internal pushback about accepting kind of this traditional submissive role within a heterosexual dynamic?
No. I know where feminism comes from with that. I understand where that pushback would come from. It was never an argument in my head. It was because it felt right. I think if it didn't feel 100% right, I probably would have that pushback. I'd be hesitant. Like, is this setting all of humanity back by me wanting to be submissive, or should women really be more in power? And I took that to be, I am in power. I am in power of my own decisions, of my own choices. And if I choose to surrender to someone, male, female, or otherwise, that is my choice. And that's what makes me powerful. In history, women didn't have that choice. And that is what feminism really came out of, is the giving the choice. So
you have a ton of folks, and I want to throw out a couple things. So you have submissiveguide.com, but you also have a Discord channel, right?
I do. My Discord channel is named Kink Network. It is publicly searchable. You can find it as a community. It has been active, very active, for a little about 6 years now. I have a wonderful core group of people that help run it, and we have active conversations all of the time, but we also host monthly munches. There are DS roundtables, which are juxtaposed to the sub forums that Submissive Guide hosts. So we've got all sorts of educational opportunities, and it's a very welcoming place if you're new, if you're experienced, if you're old hat, anything, because we're open to all views, and we have wonderful people that are just curious about everything and everyone to do with BDSM and submission. So,
and in running that, do you have options for people who want to talk about, say, heterosexual male submission or breakouts by racial group or generation?
Not individually by channels. I think that actually segregates people and makes people more uncomfortable, because they're like, oh, I have to go to this channel specific to me. And I think that having just larger groups of people opens up more open-mindedness, more acceptance, more curiosity for people who may not be exposed to the smaller subgroups of BDSM and kink. And so I'm very against splitting people off, even by role. There isn't a dominance channel and a submissive channel and a switch channel and a verse channel and a bottom channel. littles channel. It's an everything channel or a no channel.
Well, and with that wide exposure, what do you find that a lot of people are taking away from it?
Community. They're feeling very accepted, very supported, very included in who they are. And I'm very proud that they are able to take that away, that they're able to say, I'm here because this is my family now. You guys understand me. You accept me no matter what I do, no matter what roles I take, you're here for me. And that is really what all communities should be.
And for a lot of people, when I talk about why people pursue BDSM, kink, BS, all of that, is the community, right? Every community can have drama, and we all have those people we dislike. So for you, how do you, and you're doing this on a massive scale. So how do you kind of coordinate and keep the dicks off the site from saying, you know, you shouldn't be a submissive because of X, Y, or Z?
Well, we have a code of conduct for you. If you join the Discord server, you need to agree to. And that really says, don't be a dick. We, as the moderation team, we believe that everyone's going to have different viewpoints and they're not all wrong. So it's okay to have discourse and it's okay to have people challenging your thoughts and beliefs. But there is a line, and that line is when you get too personal, when you get too invasive, and when you're trying to fight the person and not the topic. So we're very adamant that we're going to give everybody a chance, but if you don't follow our rules, we don't give you another option. You're done. So.
And I bring that up because I want to make sure people know that this is a welcoming space for a wide group of people. You're not going to get a bubble discussion of this is how submission is done. No one true wares, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that there is something really phenomenal about developing community who's going through a similar journey.
Yep.
So because kink is continual journey, and I know 30 plus years in, I'm still learning all sorts of new shit. Where are you at in your personal journey right now? Like, where are you seeing growth or change?
Oh, gee, if you've paid attention to my Discord server at all, a new journey for me is I'm exploring Hugh Cow play. I have adopted an identity of a wannabe dairy cow that is now a meat cow. So my udders don't work. They will never work. The only pleasure that my owner gets from them is torturing them. So there's that. I have a name. I'm Luna Bell when I am in cow mode. And every moon day, I dress up as a cow at home. So we get into that a bit.
How does that play into your feelings about your own body? Because as a bigger body person, you probably experienced being called a cow negatively. I know I have. I know our listeners have. Like, that can be intimidating in and of itself. So how did this cow thing come about?
Oh, well, see, I don't even... we're into humiliation play, so that does help. I am his big, fat, dumb heifer. Those are words that I embrace. Those are all words that, if said out of context, would offend any bigger bodied person. With anything that you do with humiliation, it's still going to make me feel uncomfortable. That's part of the fun of it. But there's power in accepting those negative words. And yes, I am fat. Fat is a real word. It's not a bad word. That's how you can describe me. When I'm a cow, I am a heifer. A heifer is a cow that has not given birth. So you pick words and you just have to keep them factual. And like I said, with humiliation play, you're able to blur those lines. And he loves the blush on my face when He calls me a dumb heifer. And I'm like, but I'm not dumb. And he's like, you are right now.
And that is one of the things so my dominant and I are very much into humiliation play. And we work it into mantras during the play where, like, you know, I am a worthless little cum whore, you know, or whatever it is. Like, things that I would never say to anybody else or any other context during play. But there's power in that, right? There's,
yes.
Like, how do you come out of a scene after that and, like, hi, I'm doing great today? Like, because people, I think, who don't do this don't really understand that.
It requires a lot of cuddles for me and some caffeine. He's very good at reassuring me afterward. We have this little bit of ritual where he will look at me and, like, hold my face, and he will say, that was play. You are valuable to me and I love you. And that is just, it helps to pull me back and say, this is now and that was then. And that's what we need to do that. Otherwise I get stuck in my head with, oh, am I really dumb? Does he not like me? Because you can get stuck in that. After 20 years, you still can be like, am I sure he's still with me because he wants to be and not because he has to be, type of feelings. But yeah, it requires centering and reassurance to get out of a humiliation play scene. So
definitely, definitely. Now, do you have a ritual to help him recenter?
Usually a blowjob will do it.
Okay, so as a queer woman, I have to say, I do love that straight men are so singularly focused like that, because that's my dominant too. Like a blowjob and a piece of dark chocolate, and he is fine.
He's pretty good. He's not straight, mm-hmm. but yeah, he's still very hedonistic. So anything to do with sex will put his brain right.
Yeah, sometimes I think that makes it a little easier to have a partner who is in that brain space.
Yeah.
For me, it's very different than having been married to a woman and a lesbian identified woman. Like, that's a totally different brain function. And I find it very different in the kink space too. Like, gender switches up how your brain comprehend stuff. So as we're getting towards the end, you mentioned that your partner is not straight. They have begun to open up their gender identity. How does that change your conversations you have to have around your dynamic and your relationship?
Communication has to be very blunt. I have learned that I can't pussyfoot around my questions. He likes to dress femme. I use he pronouns simply because he's okay with any pronouns, and since he was who he was way back in the beginning, it's still he. But he dresses femme. He just spent $800 on a giant pair of tits that are bigger than mine. It has come up with some conversations about, since I am straight, I am not attracted to women. And so when he dresses femme, my attraction sinks. So we've had to have discussions where, when you're Jessica and not my husband, we can't do sexy stuff because that just doesn't work. And he finds that very wonderful. I'm very gender affirming because I'm not attracted to him when he dresses femme. And I'm like, okay, I understand that and accept that. I'm glad you're okay with that, because I was terrified that he would be like, why aren't you attracted to me? And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm really wired straight. I can't change that. But I'm thrilled that he can be more himself. He is far more authentic as a non-binary, femme dressing occasional, different names, all the things. He just embraces it all. And that makes him more him more of the person I love. And that makes me happy.
Well, and it speaks to the safety in the relationship that he's open to exploring that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It took some time, I think, for him to open up about it. But when he did, we've got big old boobs now that I'm jealous of.
I've just seen a whole nother line of heifer play, but, you know, that's kind of where my brain goes. So what are you currently grateful for?
I am currently grateful that I can work from home on a job that I love when I watch so many people that are working jobs that they hate. And while that's not DS related, it started out with Nightmare saying, you're going to try to work this thing from home. That's my choice for you. So get busy. And it has blossomed and it has made my life so different to other people's that I'm very grateful that I get to just get up and walk to my office and work and do things I love. And so many few people cannot do that.
Exactly. And what you produce is a labor of love for the community. So I want you to go ahead, plug your Patreon, plug your Discord, plug all the things.
Well, if you want to find me online, I am at submissiveguide.com. You can find my Patreon at subguide/society. That's SUBGUI.DE/society. And you can find the Discord at subguide/chat. And it's open for anybody to join. So we hope to see you there.
And thank you so much for creating those. I can't tell you the number of people I've referred to in the last decade to your sites and socials, because you really do an amazing amount of work. And listeners, largely this is free. So if you can afford to support the Patreon, please do, because that allows people like Luna and allows people like me to keep giving you this other stuff for free. So we will have all of those links and more in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. I loved it here. This was great.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Fat Chicks on Top. Please like, subscribe, and review our podcast on whatever platform you listen to it on. If we like your review, we may even read it online. This has been an Auntie Vice production. Producer and host, Rebecca Blanton. Audio production by Sharon Smith. Music by David Manga. And more music by Sharon Smith. For more information about Fat Chicks on Top, please visit our website for all things Fat Chicks. At fatchicksontop.com.